Sick of procurement bottlenecks, endless back and forth, and last-minute surprises? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify and automate their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement. You'll know whether spend is approved before you buy, and Bill's AI-powered automation helps reduce errors so you can make purchasing decisions with confidence. Plus, Bill Procurement puts everything you need to match and pay invoices right at your fingertips. So dump your clunky procurement process and keep your business moving and growing with Bill Procurement. Purchase, pay, and on with your day. Right now, score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Just go to bill.com/procurement200. Don't wait. That's bill.com/procurement200.
Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tire. E-Range EV tires are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tire with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetires.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tires.com to find your EV's next set of tires.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for June the 2nd, 2023. This is episode number 165. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the debut of the Volkswagen ID. Buzz long wheelbase. Toyota's producing an all-electric three-seater SUV in the U.S., and the Rivian R2S gets teased. And of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's editor and forum moderator. Joining us today is the ingenious Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EV's and host of the YouTube channel, State of Charge. We also have the masterful Mr. Martin Lee from the EV New Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out-of-Spec Studios, where he produces high-voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. So, good morning. Welcome, everybody.
Good morning.
We lost Martin.
Martin's here with us.
Can you hear me, or is it just my pictures that are gone?
We can hear you.
Oh, no.
Hopefully we don't have to look at you.
It's almost the perfect combination. Okay, let me figure what's going on.
I mean, I've never said that you have a face for radio before.
No, you don't need to. Thank you. Right, let me fix this.
No, I would be the problem today.
Martin has a great face, and he has a great new haircut too that he's going to show you all once.
I know,
so we had this
once it's working.
Apologies for being a couple minutes late, but we're just working out some issues, and apparently we haven't worked them out completely. Kyle and Tom, you joined us. I think we're going to kick right into the news, like this kickoff. We didn't actually talk about this because everything's going on. But so Kyle and Tom are actually together in California for the debut of the Volkswagen ID. Buzz long wheelbase, which is pretty exciting. Right. So let's get into that then. Are you guys in Huntington Beach? You're on mute.
You want me to talk? We're like, yo, you can answer. We are in Huntington Beach, California for the debut of the long wheelbase Volkswagen ID. Buzz. And I couldn't be more excited about it. You guys know I love Buzz. It's freaking awesome.
That's right. So this is on the Pacific Coast Highway, but this is supposedly coincides with the largest bus festival, Volkswagen Bus Festival in the USA. And in the future, June the 2nd, as today, will be known across America as VW Bus Day. As a new holiday, I guess.
Yeah, all the Volkswagen reps today are saying, Happy Bus Day, Happy Bus Day. And, you know, Bus Day sounds like birthday in German, like happy birthday. So I'm like, oh, it's your birthday? And they're like, no, it's Bus Day. And I'm like, oh, I missed the memo. So now I know it's Bus Day.
So, hey, did you guys get an opportunity to see like the assembled buses? The old.
So they're lining up right now just outside of where we are. So okay. I haven't looked outside, but it's going to be one of the largest gathering of buses in California, right. maybe even in the U.S. There's also another huge bus festival going on later this month where I think I might fly over to Germany to check that out to see okay. how current bus owners think about ID Buzz. We'll see. But overall, the vibe here is just like, how could you not love this car? It's like the only product launch that's guaranteed that everyone's going to love it. So it's sure. just a celebration of the Buzz, basically.
Right. So let me talk a little bit about the Buzz. And so let's just lay down some basic facts. So it's a three row, which is standard in the US. The third row comes standard. It's optional in the US and Europe, in Canada and Europe. It's got two battery options, 77 kilowatt hours and 85 kilowatt hour usable, which is, we were expecting like 111 kilowatt hours, or I was, but that's not happening at this point. It comes in rear-wheel drive with the new 210 kilowatt or 282 horsepower motor. It's good for a 7.9 second 0 to 60. All-wheel drive is coming in 2024. The GTX version will have 250 kilowatts or 335 horsepower. So a little extra boost of 50 horsepower. So it gives you a 6.4 second 0 to 60, which is, you know, pretty nice for a van. Max DC charging power is 200 kilowatts. The large battery can charge 10 to 80% in just 25 minutes. AC charging is 11 kilowatts. It's made in Hanover, Germany at the Volkswagen Commercials Vehicle Plant, like all the buses. First deliveries happened in 2024, early 2024, I believe. So, yeah, and that's what I have for just like the basic facts. It's got a lot of other things going on too. You can get it in 5, 6, or 7 seat configurations. It's the first Buzz with a smart glass roof. So it can turn transparent. You can see it in this photo here that Martin's showing us. It turns transparent or opaque. And so it can reflect the heat out or keep the heat in the wintertime. So it's kind of nice. And I believe it's the largest glass roof that in the Volkswagen lineup of anything. It's pretty nice. What else we got? Just a few technical things, I guess. The regeneration system sounds pretty good. It's got 0.3 G of regen deceleration. That's like 100 kilowatts worth of power, you know, to slow you down before like physical brakes would need to be kick in. Yeah. So you got to see this a bit already, Kyle. I was wondering what was your like first initial impressions of seeing this like longer, because you actually drove the short wheelbase Buzz as well. So yeah.
Yeah, so I've spent quite a bit of time in the standard wheelbase Buzz, you know, a couple thousand miles, something like that, I'm not sure. So I'm already familiar with the package. So I was able to come in and focus on the adaptations for the U.S. market. And I keep saying U.S. market because this is a vehicle that was really pushed to be built by Volkswagen Group of America for our market. Now, of course, they are going to sell it in Canada. They are going to sell the long wheelbase in Europe, but it's primarily adapted for what we need here. And a lot of it comes down to just basic expectations of the American consumer, which is basically more range, more range, a rear air vent situation, which the normal Eurospec ID Buzz doesn't even have rear air vents, roof. Those picnic tables that we're seeing, by the way, not going to be available in the U.S. configuration. They don't meet our regulations, sadly. Oh, so the car we're looking at here is a little bit of a hodgepodge. So we can't get the rear tray tables, which is actually fine because I think they're pretty flimsy anyway. So I'm cool with that. You know, you get larger rear motor. It's called the APP 550. And it should be like super great with thermal management is the main focus here. So it has oil and water coolers. It has a cooling jacket around the stator. It has stronger permanent magnets. You know, the one thing I love, higher top speed, always will take it, 99 miles an hour now, up from 90. Right. So I was trying to get Volkswagen to be like, we need a spec Volkswagen ID Buzz racing series. And how cool would that be? But overall, absolutely loving it. Can't wait to hear what Tom thinks, though, because I was with Tom when we saw it for the first time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, everything that Kyle said about loving it, the design, it's such a fun vehicle. I mean, you know, Volkswagen really nailed it with that. Where I'm concerned that they didn't nail it with is the range, because this is, you know, it's a bus. You're supposed to road trip this thing. You're supposed to be able to drive up and down the coast, cross country, go camping, you know, load this up with, you know, some people and gear and head out on a road trip. You know, even with the largest battery, which is 91 kilowatt hour gross, the usable, I'm not sure the numbers you said earlier were correct.
85.
The usable is going to be high 80s. Okay. The gross capacity is 91 and change. So the it's not EPA range rated yet, but the Volkswagen expects it to be somewhere around 250 to 260, depending if you get all wheel or rear wheel drive. So you're starting out with somewhere in the mid twos. If it's, you know, not ideal weather, you lose a few miles. If you're going on highway speeds, you lose some miles. If you're loaded up with gear, you lose some miles. Now, all of a sudden, this could be, you know, 170 miles in between charging stops, which, you know, isn't ideal, especially with it does have the 200 kilowatt charging, which is a little bit better than what Volkswagen, you know, first came out with when they introduced the ID.4. But it's still not good enough where it's you know, we're not talking, you know, Hyundai Ioniq 5, 18 minutes to 80%, which, you know, if you're going to be stopping frequently on this, if you're going on a 1500 mile road trip, you're going to have to stop a lot of times. And, you know, you want to cut it down as much as you can. So I think that could have been, the range should have been a little bit better, or the charging should have been a little more robust. Now I'm nitpicking here because it's such a fun vehicle, but we have to talk about the negatives also. And Greg just posted, not built in the USA, that will kill it for most. Well, it will kill the tax incentives. It won't qualify for the tax credit. So that's going to, at least on a purchase, on the lease, it looks like it will with the loophole that's in the tax credit. But you know, otherwise I think it's such a cool, fun vehicle. You can't not smile when you get in this or when you look at the front end. But just a little concerned about what it's meant to do and if it's capable of doing that. You know, 250 miles isn't bad for a regular EV, in my opinion, but this is like a road tripper. You know, this is, look at it, you know, you want to just take this thing and drive it across country. And, you know, I'm not sure it's going to be perfectly suited for that.
And it looks like a great, like, touring van for me personally. Like, I would, like, if I could go on, like, a little road tour as a performing artist, like a little, you know, you got place to sleep, you got place for gear. Just looks like a, you know, a wonderful place to drive. But the range is, because originally Volkswagen said that the MEB platform would support, I think, three different battery sizes, and the largest one was 111 kilowatt hours back in, you know, a few years ago they were talking about this. But so we were kind of expecting, or I was, that this van would have that, and which would give it, you know, great amount of range, I think.
And Dom, maybe they will in a few years. Maybe they'll, you know, 2 years down the road, because they did talk about wanting to keep this vehicle fresh by introducing new variants as the years go on. So, you know, and I don't think they were specifically talking about batteries. You know, I think they were talking about different, you know, outfitting it with different
camper
use cases. But right, but, you know, maybe the camper has the 112 or 115 kilowatt hour battery pack, you know. Who knows? But, you know, at launch, listen, they're going to sell every one of these, I think, that they can make. So in that regards, maybe that's why they just launched it with the 91 kilowatt hour battery pack. And then maybe when if they see demand start to wane a little bit, oh, and by the way, now you can get it with 115 kilowatt pack. But that still might not be enough for loading this thing up with cargo and going on road trips. I mean, this might need 100 and like a Rivian size battery pack, like 135, 140 kilowatt hour battery pack. If you're going to, you know, go out and use the plug-in power and use it to power electronics when you're at your campsite and so forth. So anyway, that's one thing that I don't want to keep dwelling on it, but I can't not think about it. You know, I think about this, you know, you romanticize about the bus, about what it was in the past, and it was all about freedom and, you know, kids hopping in this thing and, you know, going on, you know, coming back home 2 weeks later, you know, just going on crazy road trips. I don't know if this is going to be that type of vehicle, but, you know, maybe that's okay. Maybe it'll be a different type of vehicle.
So I have a question. Martin, can you pull up a picture with the side window going on with the other version with this? You can see that side window.
Is it one that's in the slideshow already?
Yes, there. That one we'll do.
Is that okay? Work.
Cool. Yeah. So look at that middle door, the sliding door, and it's got like a square cutout in the middle. So in the press release, it says something about sliding door windows that slide inwards electrically when opened, which I'm not sure what's going on there. Kyle.
You got to watch the Out of Spec Reviews video that just went up. I go into detail on how the windows work because it is one of the coolest windows ever. But it's actually a little bit of an optical illusion. So that giant glass panel that we're looking at, that square is the entire height of the indoor viewing area. So the glass actually extends past the viewing area. So there's just a little track that it slides backwards. It pops in and slides back. And it's really cool. I've never seen a window operate like it before. I think you'll quite like it. And it's all in the video.
Does it have like a little rubber seal around it?
Yep, I believe so. It just slots in like a normal window would. Yeah.
I was looking at it this morning. I was like, okay, maybe it like pops in and it slides, like I guess is what you're saying. But then it would need a seal, I would think, to keep it like the rain from coming, unless you get perfectly fit the glass. I think that'd be impossible.
No, right. There's a little seal there for sure. Okay. And it's all in the Out of Spec Reviews video. You can watch it kind of work in detail. It's pretty cool to see it go.
Right. And they also say in the press release that this has a brand new set of software. So hopefully it's improved over the, because that's the big strike against Volkswagen so far, really, is, the vehicles feel great, but the software. Yeah.
It's not just software. It's almost an entirely different electrical architecture to now match ID.7. So it's from the ground up, the modules, the over-the-air update capability, the software 4.0 is great. By the way, I played around with it at length. It's super snappy. And I've also played around with it in ID.7, super snappy. You get route planning, you get plug-in charge, you get battery preconditioning. It will tell you your maximum DC fast charge rate at any time. You just pull up a menu and it says, if you were to plug it in right now, here's the speeds you would get. Peak, which is really a cool feature. Mercedes does that. I love that Volkswagen's starting to do that now. It actually is a great way for drivers to learn like how to optimize their car to get faster charging. So there's a manual preconditioning option as well. There's a new sound system, 14 speaker Harman Kardon up from the base 9 speaker. Pretty much the US spec cars are coming fully specced out. The sound system and maybe one or two other little things will be the big
massaging options. Seats?
Standard massage.
Standard massaging seats. That's kind of crazy.
Standard heated, ventilated massaging front seats, heated steering wheel, heated rear seats. I would go for the captain's chair 6-seat configuration. You can get 6 or 7. And, the thing is ID.4 is going to get updated next year, but I think they're just putting this software on the existing screen and the existing architecture, which is what kind of Volkswagen guys were telling us. So I don't think the updated ID.4 will match the snappiness and speed of Buzz or ID.7, sadly.
Right.
Seemed at the roundtable, Dominic. We had a roundtable discussion that Volkswagen understood that the software was their Achilles heel, the ID.4, and that they had to take a holistic approach and not just update it and put Band-Aids on it and go, with a completely new design system. And they seem excited about this new 4.0, which is what we'll be seeing in the ID.7 and this bus. I didn't get to play around with it as much as Kyle did, so I take his word for it that he seems impressed.
Yeah, I'm looking really, really looking forward to the first drives. So Robert Angermiller asks, is there room enough for the back seats to recline a little bit? And I believe Kyle's nodding his head. Yes. So
not only can you like lounge out in the second row, it might be the largest third row I've ever sat in. There's so much room in the back of this thing. And, having dedicated air vents, dedicated USB-C ports for every seat, so much usability here. It's actually pretty insane. So, of course, I think like all the loyalists, all the Volkswagen lovers, all the people like me who are just dying to get this thing, we're all going to get it in year one. We're going to be at the dealers, clamoring in, pushing each other out of the way. We don't know how the reservation system's going to work yet. It's going to be a disaster, is my prediction. It's truly going to suck. You're going to see them over sticker for 30 or 40 over. That Volkswagen has no plans to control the dealer network. They have no clue how they're going to do it. They're just, I mean, Tom, you were with me in this meeting. They're like just starting the conversation yesterday of how to control the dealers. And they're like, oh, we're going to work together. And I'm like, no, the dealers are going to absolutely screw people over. What do you think?
No, absolutely. And if you remember, I asked them that specific question. I asked them directly, like, you know, are you considering doing something like what Ford is doing with Model A and making set pricing that the dealers have to set? Because people are this, you know, nobody's going to be able to get this at manufacturer, you know, suggested retail. There's going to be $40,000-$50,000 markups on this, like we saw early with the Lightning. And I think that kind of blindsided Ford a little. I think they might have expected dealers to want to make a little extra, but I don't think Ford expected that type of crazy 50, 60,000 over markups. And I said, you know, that's going to happen. You've seen this already. You can't say you were blindsided. It's going to happen. What are you going to do? And the answer was, well, you know, we don't comment on what other automakers do. But I will say, and as Kyle just said, just yesterday, we began the conversation with our dealer network. So, I mean, there is some time, which is okay. You know, we would like to have had this discussion earlier, but listen, this isn't going to launch until Q3 of next year.
What,
so
Q3?
This isn't going to be in dealers in the US for close to a year and a half from now. So there is time for them to work this out.
I thought it was coming in earlier in the year because the GTX is coming in next year as well, right? So they're going to be launching at the same time.
Q3 of 2024 is when this launches as a 2025 model. So we've got, you know, at least 14 to 16 months at this point before this is available. So they do have time, but I do wish they had a little bit more information to give us on. We're confident we're gonna have a plan in place so that if you reserve one, you'll be able to pay. And there was none of that. We just began the conversation with our dealers, right, which tells me there's some runway here, but you would have wished that they would have been further along. All the OEMs have to deal with this. I mean, it's kind of like they've stuck their heads in the sand and they don't want to, because it's a painful conversation. The NADA, right, the National, you know, Dealer Association, is an incredibly strong body here in the U.S. I don't know if everybody realizes the power and the influence they have, even over our politicians. It's an enormously strong body. How do you think they've fought off Tesla so hard? You know, we're a decade into Tesla, and Tesla's still not allowed to sell in some states. And, you know, they have all kind of wanky laws from state to state. They can have two showrooms in this state. They can have one in a service center in this state. So they're incredibly strong. And that was with a startup without a dealer network. All of these other companies have dealer networks and that's the linchpin there, because the dealer networks are involved also fighting the OEM. It's not just NADA. So the dealer networks are saying, you're going to damage our brands, our investment if you're allowed to dictate the pricing. So this is going to be hard. And, you know, I don't know how the cards are going to fall, but I suspect there's going to be hefty markups on a lot of these vehicles.
Right. I mean, well, so like you were saying, Q3 2024 is a good ways away from now. So the market could change drastically between here and now. Who knows, you know, things happen in this world and it's hard to predict exactly. But if things stay as normal, I guess we can probably look forward to some markup on some, you know, highly desirable vehicles. Yeah, it kind of sucks, but that's the world we live in, right?
But here's the thing with the buzz. They're going to sell every single one they can make at whatever price they decide to bring it in at. It's going to be freaking cool. And that's going to be like the first 2 or 3 years will just be unlimited demand. At that point, then it's going to be, okay, is it actually a competitive vehicle? Because EV9 is coming out. You have, you know, of course, Tesla Model X used ones will be in this price category as well. If you're looking for a 3-row family hauler and like you just need that and you don't really care about the car, is this going to be your first option? Right now, I would say yes. It is probably, you know, ignore the fun factor, probably the most practical 3-row EV on sale because it's just so big and there's so much room. But will it hold that crown forever? I don't know. What do you think, Tom?
Let me unmute here. So yeah, no, it's going to go through the stages, and I think that Volkswagen is planning on that, and that's what they talked heavily about, constant updating it and offering new innovative options, Kyle. And I think that with a vehicle like this, if they can do that, there's so many possibilities, there's so many things they can do in addition to offering more range and putting in a bigger battery. There's so many different configurations. It's like the sky's the limit. So, you know, I think that it'll remain fresh for a while. And also, they're not going to be making a ton of these. Currently, you know, the worldwide production for this is what? The factory's output is 100,000. I think they told us just
for the passenger versions. Yes.
For the passenger version. And, okay. Right. And they're not, the first year, they're not going to approach delivering that many of them. So it's going to be supply constrained for a while. And then, as you said, I think it's going to be interesting when we wait 2 years down the road and see what the demand is then. But just to circle back really quick to the dealer thing, because I forgot, and this is one of the things that I found interesting yesterday, Kyle. I don't know if you did. It seemed like all the Volkswagen reps were talking about how they were really concerned for loyal Volkswagen customers. It almost seemed to me like, and I could have been misreading it, that if you're a loyal Volkswagen customer, let's say you bought 4, 5, 6 Volkswagens over the years, you're going to have some sort of a quick and easier way to reserve one and lock in a price. I mean, I don't even know how that could be arranged, but they did. Everybody I talked about how, you know, they want to make sure their loyal customers don't get gouged. And it's almost seemed to me like they might be trying to figure out a way of offering preferential ordering for loyal Volkswagen customers and lock them into a price. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, I mean, I totally agree. At the end of the day, Volkswagen USA is an importer of VW vehicles. We also have localized manufacturing, which, by the way, we pushed them so hard to be like, just build the damn thing in Chattanooga. Like, doesn't that make sense? And yeah. We were with the CEO of Volkswagen USA. He's just like, no, doesn't make sense. Just a huge investment. And like, I'm like, but like, you could sell an unlimited number of these things. And he's like, we're just going to keep it in Hanover. So I'm like, could you possibly, well, Joel Federex, one of our good friends, asked if like, could you possibly build it in Chattanooga? And they're like, oh yeah, we could. I'm like, well, that seems like the right thing to do. And they're like, oh no. So no plans to do that at the moment. Tom's totally correct on the vibe he got about the dealer situation. Definitely seems like, yeah, they kept talking about loyal Volkswagen enthusiasts and owners and not wanting to tarnish the brand with markups. At the end of the day, the manufacturer gains nothing when a dealer does a markup. You know, it's not like the manufacturer gets that money. And in fact, they don't know how they can penalize the dealership for it. But I agree with Tom. These conversations should have been started sooner. When they presented the vehicle to us, they knew these questions were going to come. They should have had answers to it. And it's just a little bit disappointing because it's going to be such a cool car. But how the heck are we going to buy it? I don't know.
And circling back before we end that last topic, I'm circling back to Ford's decision to create this sub-brand and then lock dealers into set pricing. In my opinion, and you guys know, I've and I never really was in the past, but I've turned into a kind of a Ford fan the last couple of years with what they've been doing. And this is another example of leading. And you know, that was a huge move for them, which is costing them tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, fighting lawsuits and everything to try to break down the barriers on the grip that the dealer lobby has on selling cars in the United States. Somebody had to be first, and Ford went out there and said, we're going to do it. We're going to try to get set pricing for our electric vehicle customers, and we're going to lead the way. It's kind of like what they just did with the Tesla and the Tesla connector. So, you know, I got to give Ford a lot of credit, and they might have opened the doors for, say, a Volkswagen and other brands to then say, oh, we could do what they did. We could carve out a sub-brand. We could say, if you want to buy a franchise, that you have to do set pricing. And, you know, it's still, the jury's still out if the Ford's deal is going to work, because they're being sued all over the place. There's currently active, I think 12 states have active lawsuits against Ford so that they can't dictate pricing. And, you know, it could be a state-by-state thing. You might, you know, when you go to Wyoming, you might have to go to a dealer and pay whatever they want, and then when you're in California, you can get set pricing or whatever. But I want to give Ford kudos for starting this conversation that every other manufacturer is watching closely, because you could bet your butt if Ford is successful, the other guys are going to say, okay, well, they can do it, so now we're doing it.
Speaking of Ford, Jordan S. points out that Ford also announced a three-row EV coming in 2025 that will have the NACS port. That would be the Ford Explorer for North America. We mentioned it briefly last week. So that's another three-row that's coming, along with the EV9, which I'm really looking forward to. Hey, just off the top of your head, Kyle, when's the EV9 come out?
Oh, the top of my head, non-existing, don't remember. But soon, I think this year, towards the middle to end of this year.
Right on. All right. So anything else we want to say about the Buzz before we move on? It's got great turning radius. I don't know, we haven't driven it yet, but it's got like a 38.7 foot turning radius, which I think is going to be awesome in rural drive, at least. Unfortunately, I think it's going to be priced out of too high for Uber drivers, but this would be like the ultimate Uber machine, right?
Honestly, I think Volkswagen should make it expensive. It's their halo car, and it's just making it a desirable product. But of course, all the product planners are like, Kyle, you got to stop talking about that, because we're trying to make it as cheap as possible. But I'm like, make it $100,000 and make it just like super unobtainium, especially if you can't build that many. But I have a weird opinion. That's just my opinion on this particular car. I think other cars should be less expensive.
Sure.
Speaking of price, that hasn't been announced yet. Sorry, Dom. But I'm going to throw out starting price $64,999. That's my guess. Starting price.
Well, I'm going to write
that
down.
The rear-wheel drive version. Hmm.
I think they're trying really hard to get it in the high 50s.
Yeah. Oh, high 50s. Okay. I would think low 50s, personally. But
No way. You know how much, this thing's got it got everything, and it's coming fully loaded from the factory.
Oh, right. That's true. All the options, all that smart glass. Yeah, I guess you got a point there. But that's, I think, so looking at that, this could be like the battery situation, 85 kilowatt hours. I'm thinking that is one way to keeping the price from being like exorbitant, basically. I mean, because if you put 111 kilowatt hour battery, that's a lot. Battery is expensive. So that's good. That would jack up the price another $10,000, 11, 85. That'd be my math.
And people will pay it. They could just, make it $120,000. They'll sell all they can bring into the country, I think.
Right. I mean, yeah, people would pay it.
It doesn't have the value to justify that high of a price tag, because, of course, it's using all the same materials from like ID3 and ID4 inside, and it's not like super premium. But like, the price is not the issue here to sell them. And honestly, I'd rather see the manufacturer make money more than the dealers, because what do the dealers do at the end of the day? They're like, here's your paperwork, take your car, when the manufacturers have to design, build, engineer it, all that stuff. Like,
they have to, the dealerships have to pay people to call you all the time. If you make, someone shows up on your website and makes a mistake of actually, interacting with the site, someone has to send all those junk emails and phone calls barraging you. Anyway, sorry. I've gone through
this experience recently,
and it was like a lot. Yeah, let's move along. So let's talk about Tom. This week you had a video asking how many amps does your home charging station really need? And I don't know. I didn't get a chance to actually watch this. And I think you have an article up on Inside EVs with it as well.
Yep, I did. So, I try to follow what I get questions about, and I get tons of emails, and I want to make a public apology to everyone that's emailed me and I haven't responded. I get, between my Inside EV's email address and my other email addresses, at least 20 to 30 emails a day. People asking me for charging advice. What, I just bought a BMW i4. What charger should I get? I just have this. But a lot of times it's about how much power do I need? Do I really need, obviously, if you have unlimited budget, put in a 100-amp circuit in your garage and you're future-proofed, and you can have two chargers in the future and whatever. But most people don't live in that world. Everyone is trying to squeeze out as much power as they can to be able to charge their car and spend the least amount of money. So I put this video out to try to explain how many miles of range per hour you'll get, depending on whether you're charging on as low as 16 amps on the 240 volt circuit and all the way up higher, and why you might not need to charge at such a high rate. Everybody, when they get their EV, they're like, oh, I have a 240 mile range and it charges at 40 kilowatt hour, 40 kilowatt. So, 10 kilowatt. So oh geez, I'll have it's 12 hours to fully charge my car. And I talked, you only need to replace what you use that day. You know, everybody when they're new, when you haven't driven an EV, are always looking at full charging times. And so I talk a little bit about this, and I explain to people, this is really a video for beginners more so than people that have EVs and understand what's going on. Sure. And the comments are probably the best comments I've had on any of my videos ever, where people like, I found this and I was just currently trying to figure this out myself. I didn't know what type of circuit, and this explained, like I talk about, first of all, you have to factor in how much power can your EV take in. Then you have to factor in how much power is available at your house. Then you have to talk about what your budget is. And then you have to think about what your driving needs. How much are you going to be driving every day? You know, when I talk to them, you don't have to leave your house fully charged every day, even if it doesn't completely charge overnight. It's okay to leave with 75% battery in the morning, you know, if you're not driving 300 miles that day. And just kind of went over some of the real high 30,000 foot questions that people have on when they're deciding how powerful of charging they need. And then I wrapped it up at the end and saying, look, and also have an eye on being on future proof. So even if you're, let's say your house can only support without doing a service upgrade, which you don't want to spend on right now. That's a chart that people can just print up. Let's say you can only afford a 30 amp circuit right now without doing a full service upgrade. So you're going to charge it 24 amps. I recommend running a wire for a higher circuit, like a 60 amp circuit. And of course, you know, having the proper circuit breaker in there, but only do your wiring once, because down the road, when you do a service upgrade, which you probably will at some point, the wiring will be in place. That's one of the expensive things, running, you know, 150 foot of number six cable or something like that. You can future proof. You can have a low powered circuit now, but do what you can to future proof in the future, so you don't spend twice. Like, you could even buy a charger that allows you to derate the charger down to the 24 amps if your car can't do that. Some vehicles let you set the amperage it pulls inside the vehicle, but not all electric vehicles. So you could run a higher, a thicker cable. You could derate your charger. And then let's say 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, you get another EV. And now you say, okay, I got to bite the bullet. I have to do a service upgrade now because we're going to be charging two cars. Now you already have a proper circuit and and one of the chargers that you can dial it back up to 10 kilowatts or 11.5 kilowatts, and you're halfway there. So it's just some basic best practices. And it seems to hit the mark because, like I said, so many people are commenting, this is exactly what I was looking for. I've never seen your channel, but, you know, this popped up, and great work. Thanks. So, yeah.
Right on. Okay. So let's move along. So Kyle, you had a number of videos out this week. You started the week out with one from about the Rivian charging network, their Venture Network charging station build out. I don't know if you want to spend a whole lot of time talking about that, but just basically, maybe just why should people watch this video?
Oh, you really shouldn't, because I'll give you the summary right now. So basically, the Rivian Adventure Network is getting built out slowly but surely. You know, they promised this huge number of stations. I don't remember what it was offhand. But, you know, all of us looked at each other who knew charging infrastructure. We're like, that's just not possible. You know, not without, you know, just spending all the money in the world. So now we're finally getting new stations. They're changing the way that the trucks communicate with the chargers. They've now implemented plug and charge rather than using their own proprietary way to activate the chargers. So there's actually a certificate handling process now that's going through ISO 15118. So that's all great. The chargers themselves seem to be fairly reliable, and I praise their reliability in this video, except for the fact the next day, or at least a couple days later, the entire Salida, Colorado site randomly went offline. So, you know, there's still some teething problems here, I guess, but overall, they do a really great job at building, you know, these chargers. I've never personally had an issue using one, but right. We have seen some rate your charges of some problems. But yeah, overall, I think Rivian Adventure Network is sweet. I'd like to see them in more adventurous places rather than, you know, this one's at a mall next to an EA station. So I'm like, I'm not really sure where this is allowing me to go that I couldn't go before.
Right.
So like, you know, put
the trailhead, right?
yeah, like start by putting them in places that expand the distance we can take our trucks. And there's more coming and more planned. And so I mean, okay. Props to Rivian for at least recognizing the problem and building out their own network.
Right. I think it's good to have for automakers to have their own chargers out there, you know, besides just, you know, they can partner up with like Electrify America or EVgo or whoever, but you know, being able to put your own signage on things, I think it's a plus.
And they're going to open the network soon is what it sounds like as well. So other EV drivers will be able to use these. I'm not sure how they're going to handle payment processing. It doesn't seem like they're going to be eligible for NEVI funding or anything like that because there's no payment terminal on the actual dispenser. Okay. So, you know, a lot of questions up in the air, but overall, very cool. Also, I wonder if Rivian will be one of the first to switch to the Tesla port. We talked to some of the Volkswagen guys about that, and they were like, no. They were like,
oh, really?
CCS is the standard. This is that is just not going to happen. And ultimately, I think that's fine. As long as this adapter exists and Tesla will open up some public stations, if you own an adapter, is how I think this is all going to play out. You can charge any car anywhere. You just have to carry, you know, one or two adapters in your car, sadly.
Right.
It was 3,500 DC fast chargers in 600 locations by the end of 2023 when they announced this a couple of years ago.
And what do they have, four or six?
This was like 2021. Then we all fell off our chairs and we're like, in 2 years, 3 years, no. So there you go.
Right.
I mean, I remember when I was on the Rivian R1T first drive, we were talking about it in the vehicle with the Rivian reps. And I think I've mentioned this on the podcast. Well, I virtually said, like, and one of the guys who was in charge of charging was in the car, and I was like, there is no way you're going to have this done in this time frame. And they're like, watch us. And I was like, you know, I talk to the folks at Electrify America and EVgo all the time, and it's such a bear getting the sites, getting the interconnections, all this stuff. You guys are nuts. You will have done it faster than any of the companies, faster than Tesla, faster than EA, faster than everyone. If you hit these numbers, like, you know, make it more realistic so we don't have to report that you failed to do what you said you were gonna. And no, they stuck with that, and it ain't happening. I mean,
It's not the end of 2023 yet, so they might get 3,500 DC fast chargers in the ground. Hey, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt until the end. That can be our New Year's show. Say, well done, Martin,
COVID.
Oh, that's what it was. It was COVID. Yeah. Even without COVID, just like as Tom says, the idea of buying land, doing the agreements, getting substations and electrical connectivity can take years. There's a Tesla supercharger station that I would love to be open, not because I know Tesla, but it's been years. And I've spoken to the people at Tesla about it, and they're like, yep. It's just tied up in red tape. They got the location. They think are 12 chargers in the ground, and they've just had those natty little sewn covers. It used to just be like some plastic around them.
They're like potato sacks now.
Yeah, like the branded potato sacks, and then they get dirty and old, and somebody comes along and takes the old ones off and puts new ones on with cable ties around the bottom. I know because I've tried to lift one up before to have a look underneath. Like, are these things real? And no, I didn't touch Tesla property. I didn't do that. And but yeah, they're just not. And I've spoken to Tesla, and it's simply the grid connection. It's the paper. Years, if anyone knows it, Fleet Services southbound M3 coming out of London. And it's just like they've just put two new electric highway ones in. They've put two new, that service network, I think they're Welcome Break, I think they're called. They've got their own network called Apple Green. Odd name, don't know why they picked it. They just put two in of their own. So chargers are going into that service station, but the 12 Tesla ones never turned on. So the idea of Rivian, who weren't even making vehicles at the time, that were going to become like superheroes in the charging world and has somehow like discovered the secret source of acquiring land, of making the chargers. It was, and that's the stupid thing, is then we had to report it and go, they're being stupid. But it's not the end of the year, so good luck.
Right on. So
and Martin, it's not just superchargers. There's EA sites that have been installed and, you know, are just collecting dust. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we criticize Electrify America for, rightfully so. But that isn't one of them that we shouldn't. And I know there's people that show up on Twitter and they're like, what's up with this? It's been in for 12 years. EA, what are you doing wrong? They want nothing more than to get that site online. But it's probably being held up by either a utility issue or inspections, something with the town, the county that it's in. Yeah. So it's a very tough business. You know, at this point, a thankless business that loses money installing DC fast charging. And that's part of the reason why we haven't seen it better than what we're getting right now. Tesla was the only one to really do it and make it work and everything. And they, because they took this holistic approach of, you know, this is existential for our company. The only way we succeed is if we do this. So, you know, none of the other companies, you know, have that, you know, mandate. So, you know, it's going to get better, but don't think for a minute that the charging network doesn't want to get those sites online. They do. When you see a site collecting dust, it's because it's being held up for some reason.
Yep.
Right on. Hey, so Kyle, you had a video this week as well. You had a Toyota BZ4X on loan, and you went to go get your wisdom teeth extracted, and then it wouldn't open. The 12 volt basically had died, basically. And so this is like a big issue with electric vehicles. Martin, I believe you had a similar issue with one of your vehicles a couple weeks ago. So.
Yep, I can tell you about that. First sign, it was with the Hyundai Kona. First sign was I went to have a look at the range on the app to know whether to start to charge it or not, because we've got lots of sunshine at the minute and a home battery, and I was working out, where do I could put a load of washing on or heat the water or charge the car, and it wouldn't connect. So I thought, servers are down. And then maybe 2 hours later, went outside with the key and pushed the button and nothing was going on. And so, a little frustrating, because then you've got to get, key's not here, but you've got to take the little tab and get the key out, let yourself in the driver's door. And then I could pop the bonnet and then I could get a multimeter on the 12 volt, which was reading 6.4 volts. Now, for a 12-volt battery, which should sit around 13 or 14, they call it a 12-volt battery, like, that's bricked. So I was like, So I thought, that's not even low. Once a 12-volt lead acid gets that low, I'm like, that's a dead. That's a bricked battery. But either way, I've got some leisure batteries that I have in an... I don't have the funky box that Kyle had, and I'm going to have a look online for that, but I got some 12-volt batteries that I have in my off-grid solar. So I took one of those, carried it up the driveway, connected it to the car. The alarm goes off. I was doing this, I think, at about 10:30 at night, and I'm like, oh, crap, where's the remote? I was doing it when the family are in bed, everyone's in bed, and connected it out just with some jump leads that I had from when we used to have combustion cars, and then left the car on while I sat and did some work for about 2 hours. Great thing about that, I didn't realize you can actually turn all the lights off on the Kona, which I've never used it for sort of sleeping in or whatever. A lot of EVs, they always have like a side light or a running light, which you just can't turn off. And I know that because my neighbor has texted me. I've had the car on before. My neighbor's texted me in the past to go, oh, sorry to disturb you late night. You left your car on. I'm like, no, I haven't left my car on. It's in anyway. And so that was great. So I just left it running in handbrake on in neutral for 2 hours. And then thought, well, I'll come back in the morning and then I'll take one of our other cars to go and buy a new battery. In the next morning, it was fine. It was sitting, it's low. It's about 12.2, 12.5 volts. But it's working. So, and it has worked for the last 2 weeks. Will replace a friend of mine who has experienced the Hyundai Kona batteries. It's a 2-year-old car, which kind of sucks. And he went, oh, you probably do that under warranty if you complain loud enough. I hadn't left the car on, hadn't left anything running. It surprised me because it's only 2 years old. It's a summer 21 car. And I'm like,
but Hyundai has major problems with this because Ioniq 5 and EV6 have the same problems. Why is it so hard for them to figure this out? They even put a little light on the dash for the US versions when the DC to DC is charging the 12 volt battery, which is like a very weird thing. And then you get that one nerd in the audience who's like, well, that's for the service technician to know when the high voltage systems energize. I'm like, I'm not a service technician.
No, I don't need
to
know.
Put the light somewhere else. I don't give a crap. But yeah, so like, that's true. But yeah, BZ4X freaking bricking itself. The car had 400 miles on it. It was
brand
a
new
press car from Toyota. I was the first one to get it. It literally came out of the port straight to the press office and then right to my house and just like broke down. I was like, oh, God.
But luckily you had the portable charger. I guess you could get it going, but you didn't have time for that because you had to get your teeth extracted, which I hope you're feeling somewhat recovered from that. It's been almost a week or...
Totally good. The only problem, I had a massive case of aggressive hiccups for like 2 days, but now I'm I'm good. It was crazy. So painful.
Tom, actually, just not to spend a whole lot of time on it, but Tom, I believe you had some teeth surgery last weekend too. Did yours?
Yeah, I had one tooth extracted the same day Kyle did, and mine was fine. Just a little a little groggy for a few hours, and everything was fine.
Okay. Right on. All right. So, I don't know. The underlying reason for this battery issue, though, we don't know what it in the Hyundais, they figured it out, though. It's like the blue, what do you call it? The blue the link?
Blue link.
It was Toyota's... just requesting stuff from the car like all the time, like too much. People have to put their key fob in like a lead lined something,
like a Faraday cage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I forget where mine people is. It's just a little envelope, but again, I haven't got anything out here, but it's like a little, black pouch, and inside it is some more fabric, and they do work brilliantly. You put them inside there, you walk up to the car, and it absolutely blocks the signal. We have one of those. Just out of an abundance of caution, not that I think you can clone the key on the Kona, not that you'd want to steal our car. There's frankly much nicer cars in our road. One of them's an ID Buzz, by the way, and my neighbors bought a Buzz. Ooh. And I mean, enormously jealous, but so we don't have the nicest cars in the driveway in the street, so they can nick somebody else's, but we do have one of those out of abundance of caution. So it wasn't that. I have been told that I need to go back and get the latest software or firmware for the dealer to install because it fixes it. But I don't know. But from what I thought was, like, that's very, very low for a 12-volt. I thought, well, there's no coming back from that. It seems to be okay at the minute. On the UK ones, it's a little orange light in the Hyundai badge on the front, I believe. Again, I've been told that. It lights up sometimes. Huh. And I'm like...
So in the US spec Konas, I believe the Kona in the US lights up the charge port orange.
Okay.
Is something I've seen, which is interesting. Okay. And then for the IONIQ 5, it's on the dash. It's actually a little bubble.
That's great. So enormously frustrating, and we shouldn't have we shouldn't have this because it should wake itself up and charge itself from the traction battery. Why it didn't wake itself up, I don't know. I didn't assume at the beginning that it was the 12 volt because it's quite a new car, not as new as a press car that Kyle's battling with here. So I thought it was something else, and I was like, oh no, this feels expensive. And I was like, oh, hang on a minute, it's probably just the 12 volt. And I was lucky enough that I could get a multimeter on it and have a look at what the DC voltage was on that. But I think for somebody who wasn't expecting that, or if it been my wife in a car park, she'd just been like, well, I'm going to call recovery because the car's totally, the whole EV is dead. And it's not. It's an 80 quid. It's not even a beefy 12 volt battery, like a beefy 12 volt battery to crank a diesel or something. These are simple, cheapo little 12 volt batteries. They shouldn't be going. They just need to get the EV running.
Right. I heard the Tesla Model 3 batteries only last like a couple of years here in the South where it's hot. Mine's a northern car, so it's still got the original battery from 2018. So I need to
set your watch by Tesla 12 volts going. So
yeah, I'm going to try to replace that this summer for sure. Hopefully before I have any issues. But yeah, but moving on from the 12 volt, that's an interesting situation. It'd be really nice if they get this solved because it's like kind of ridiculous. So Kyle, you took a Volkswagen ID4 62 kWh battery. That's a small version of a small battery, rear wheel drive on your 10% challenge. Now I didn't see the whole thing. I'm not sure how much you want to disclose, but really quick, I guess tell people, new viewers, really quickly what the 10% challenge is, I guess.
Someone just commented maybe there was some more 12 volt issues just back on that topic because of an OBD port in the car. The answer is no. I did some research, talked to some owners, talked to some reviewers who also use OBD ports. No problems. And the 12 volt issue is happening without the port. So I think unrelated. Definitely isn't helping anything, but I don't think it caused the problem. Anyway.
And I do. I also use an OBD dongle with the car scanner app. And so I use it, because I don't need to, but I'm a nerd. And I've had that running for the last 2 weeks, watching the 12 volt fluctuate as I'm driving and been doing some big, decent, chunky journeys the last couple of weeks. The 12 volt, the battery voltage fluctuates by quite a lot when I'm driving. And again, that might not be normal. So again, I'll get that because it can sit down at 12 and a half for a while, then up to 14 when it's charging. And then the voltage sags again when it stops charging. So, no, but I didn't have the dongle plugged in overnight. No, it wasn't a drain. So, no, as Carl says.
Yep, 62 kilowatt hour ID4 base car. This was, just the standard rear-wheel drive spec ID4. Had the bigger wheels because it was the nicer premium spec version.
Nice wheels.
And they're all this way. Like, if you drive around Colorado, all you will see are Rivian R1Ts and R1Ss and this exact spec ID4. They're just, like, on every corner. You know, Michaela has the same spec. Colton has the same spec. You just see them everywhere. Did this 10% challenge, which you guys who don't know it, you can check it out on Out of Spec. It's, like, a great way for us to measure the road trip range of an EV. This did fine at 60 miles. I think anything under 50 is unacceptable. 50 to 100. Totally usable for the occasional road trip. 100 plus is just exceptional. And the more important than this story, because this is the base ID4, it's not the long range version, it's not the one people are going to take on big trips, is the Tesla Model 3 LFP we ran yesterday.
That's the other one you did. Yeah.
Yes. And Ryan did this test, and that car freaking crushed it. 106 miles, I think, something like that. And it's the base Tesla. It was the cheapest Tesla you can buy. It's 39 or 40 grand. It's like, get some tax credits, get some additional stuff. This thing, so efficient, almost 4 miles per kilowatt hour at 80 miles an hour. Just insane results.
Wow. That sounds pretty good. If you're looking for a Tesla Model 3 right now, Tesla has inventory cars marked down by a grand or two or three. So now is a good time. I think the Highland, the refreshed version of Tesla Model 3 is going to come out very soon.
Well, that's what we were expecting, wasn't it? We were expecting all this Model 3 inventory being shifted. And we were told, 2 weeks ago, it's because the new Model 3, and then a week ago, it's because the new Model 3 is coming. And then it was meant to be yesterday, the new Model 3 is coming. And it hasn't happened. But yeah, go and have a look at the inventory, because they are shifting, for whatever reason, the existing inventory. But we just keep getting told, normally by Tesla blogs, like, it's tomorrow. It never is.
Well, I mean, we had a rumor, I think we published too, that it could be announced yesterday in China, because Elon Musk was in China, and for whatever reason there was rumors that the Model 3 was going to, Highland was going to be make its debut while he was there, like a surprise. But I don't know, Tesla doesn't really do surprises like that so much. I don't know, but 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
It's always two weeks.
All right. So yeah, your Tesla Model 3 LFP battery ripped the 10% challenge. That's showing up at a charging station, like down at 10% charge. Plug in for 15 minutes exactly. And how far can you go on that 15 minutes of charge? Basically at 80 miles an hour, which is faster than what we usually run in our range test. We usually do that at 70 miles an hour, but this is kind of 80 miles an hour is, like you say, kind of representative of how many people drive on the highway. So yeah. And so
ultimately we need a repeatable speed, and everyone complained that 70 was too slow for a range test. And then you get the nerds who are like, I drive my Bolt at 40 miles an hour with the hazards on, and 70 is too fast, but you can't please everyone. So ultimately we did 80 for this test because that's how people drive. I mean, when I go on a road trip, I'm just autopilot set in kilometers at the maximum it'll go, which is like 3 miles an hour more than if you use miles an hour, is the old school trick. Cause you can go 93 miles an hour with, at least an adaptive cruise, no more lane centering at 90. But so it's a very representative speed to, like, look at where we're driving out in the middle of nowhere. That's America. You're not doing that in the UK everywhere. You're not going to be doing that, in New York. But, here in the West, we can drive at 90 miles an hour. No one will care. So, yep,
That's why we run this speed. The other things we have coming, by the way, we have more ID4 62 kilowatt hour testing, range and charging testing coming. I forget how far it went on a charge, under 200 miles. You don't have to watch the video. It's more for benchmarking purposes. The charging curve might be worth watching, and I think I might actually compare it to the big battery ID4 because zero to full in like 52 minutes. Like, it's one of the fastest charging cars out there, but no big peaks. It just has a really nice curve overall. You know, charges really fast up top. It's why we keep seeing ID4 runners fully charging their cars, because they just get up there real quick. Yeah, so that's about it from my side this week. But Tom and I kind of have to rock and roll here to go see some buzz stuff. So we might leave you and Martin to do some news. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, for sure. It's like you see everybody leaving now and heading to the, I think it's like on the beach where we're going next, right? I think that's where today's events are.
Okay, sounds
and,
awful.
Check out all the other buses and everything. And I'm actually pulling out a little earlier today. I'm leaving in a couple of hours. So I got to get in last shots and videos that I can before we take off. I think we're going to punch out now. We've been on for an hour, Kyle. Let's head over there. The only thing I'll mention is what I have coming up tomorrow on my channel. I have I reviewed a new charger, Schumacher. The company Schumacher that makes a lot of automotive parts, diagnostic tools, battery chargers, things like that. They put out their first electric vehicle charger, EVSE. So I did a full review on it. It's about an hour long. This is one of my longer reviews, and that's going up on my channel tomorrow. So if anybody's interested in the new Schumacher charger, check that out over on State of Charge.
Right, well, have fun at the beach.
And I just texted my Volkswagen dealer, and I said, I want the first customer ID Buzz. And he says, I'll get one for you as soon as they open up the orders. So, okay, I guess it's coming to an out-of-spec channel near you. One day.
Third quarter of 2024.
Yeah, maybe. And it's a very small dealer in Colorado, but we love those guys. Ed Carroll Motor Company, there's a plug. All right, we're out. We'll see y'all later.
All right, take care.
All right. Okay.
Excellent.
All right.
Gone.
Okay. Hey Martin, right. I guess it's you and me.
It's us and the viewers. So here we go. Let's have a good conversation with everyone watching right now. We'll get your comments up on screen. So leave a comment about everything that Dom tells you about.
All right. So just to get along, keep going with what we've been doing this week. So I didn't drive anything different this week. Just my normal Tesla Model 3 a little bit. Actually, I got an update last night, and I'm looking forward to trying that out, seeing if they've improved the FSD beta, full self-driving beta, see how that's improving. I've heard good things so far, but we'll see. But I just want to mention, so a few weeks back, I went to visit the site of Hyundai Motor Group's plant that they're building in Savannah. And it's basically still like a field with, they've done a lot of the clearing. There's some concrete pads. There's some steel girders and cranes going up. But I wrote up a whole article about it, more in depth about, the whole situation there and some about their overall plans for electrification and manufacturing in the U.S. But let's see, I'm trying to find my notes here on this. So I just bring this up because I wrote the article this week. And after I wrote the article, somebody in the Inside EVs forum asked me about the EV4, if it was coming to the U.S. And it kind of took me back because I forgotten all about the EV4. It was mentioned briefly. There's Hyundai's or Kia's going to have an EV3 and an EV4 at some point. But the articles from, I think, a year ago were talking about the EV4 only coming to Europe. But then it was a European executive who was talking about it. So maybe he wasn't aware, or maybe anyway. So I don't know, Martin, if you know anything about the EV4, whether it's coming to the US or not. But I'm thinking about this factory. What they're going to build, you're on mute.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the EV4.
Right. This is a render.
It seems to have come and gone. Yeah, it's Auto Express, a UK magazine. There's no talk about it, but that's interesting. So yeah, let's keep that on the bubble, as it were.
So I'm wondering, is this plant going to turn out? It's going to be able to turn out 300,000 to start? Yeah, 300,000 vehicles to start, which is a lot. And in my mind, I thought they're going to just produce maybe Ioniq 6, Ioniq 6, since that's what we had a little drive program when we were visiting there. So they let us drive the EV6. So you know, it kind of in your mind you think, oh, maybe they're going to build this here. But actually, a high volume vehicle, like a lower cost, a compact SUV crossover situation, I think that would be, that would demand that kind of volume. You know, I think they could sell a lot of those with the right prices built in the US. So they get the full $7,500 credit. And I believe LG has been announced as a partner on the battery portion of this complex, because there's a whole number of buildings going up and some suppliers, and part of that is a battery factory. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that. Basically, the Pup EV asks, isn't the e-Niro essentially the EV4? I think kind of in size, it's like right in there. And Bert mentions it looks a little like the Soul EV size. The image that we had looks like they're trying to, you know, communicate what they think the EV4 could look like in the future, and it looks like they took the front of the EV6 and the base body shape of the the Soul, the Kia Soul, and you know, it's kind of interesting little package there. But yeah, we'll have to wait, I guess, a little bit longer to see what they're going to do with that. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that before we talk about some news. So speaking of news and building stuff in America and getting back to the buzz, the three-row vehicles. Toyota has announced that it will build an all new three row battery electric SUV at its Kentucky plant in Georgetown, Kentucky, starting in 2025. Georgetown is Toyota's largest manufacturing complex globally, so that's the biggest thing. I think it's got 550,000 vehicles of capacity. We don't know what it's going to be exactly, but actually, hey, Martin, there's a little link on this show notes in highlight in green.
Ah, yeah.
I don't know if you pull that up. It's just a picture.
Yeah, let me find that. Was that from just the picture of their
launch? Yeah. So this is a couple, a year or so ago when Akio Toyota-san was still the CEO of Toyota, and they brought out, you know, all these vehicles, you know, that could be made. You know, and we see the BZ4X there and the RX450E is there. But on the far left, if you scooch over to the left, that one there, right there.
There? Okay.
That's the biggest looking SUV there. And then the one behind it looks like a Lexus.
That's a Lexus, I think, yeah. So same vehicle, do you think? Or same platform?
Looks like it to me. It looks like it can build both of those things. If those, you know, that's the largest things... Three rows. I don't know if the eventual design in 2025 is going to be this or not.
Yeah.
But I would put a small wager if I was a betting person
be a really popular vehicle to come with as well. So
right.
I get 2 years away. I know. Well, they're going to make it in 25. So what, 26 model year maybe? But that would be a very popular like segment to come with. Kia will get there first with the EV9, obviously.
Right.
But yeah. To be second, no, late to the party, that's fine, as long as they come with something half decent.
Right. I mean, it's going to be half decent. I mean, these looks fine. These look fine. The Toyota could tweak the styling or come up with a completely different styling, and it'll be fine, right? Because Toyota, you know, has pretty much safe designs for the most part, I think, and you know, have a great reputation. As I say that, William Erazo posts, I will believe it when I see it. I don't trust Toyota, which is understandable. We've been saying they're a little slow on their all-electrification. They've been doing hybrids forever and doing that well, and you know, and they're very proud of that. But yeah, we want to see them doing all-electrics more and more.
Yeah.
So this is a good start. This is like a vehicle that people will want to buy, and it's a market niche that's pretty large, and I think, you know, it makes sense.
Johnny says on Facebook, not trying to be political, but if it wasn't for the tax credit, they wouldn't be built in the US. Yeah, but I think you have to be political. You can't ignore the politics of it.
Yeah.
So I know you're not trying, you know, trying to be political. It's almost like,
right,
you have to almost apologize for being bringing up politics sometimes, because it can be so divisive. But I think in this case, absolutely genuinely warranted, Johnny. It absolutely is. It is completely 100% a political decision that was made with the Inflation Reduction Act in order to incentivize US production of batteries, of vehicles. semiconductors with CHIPS Act, with the renewables, with the solar incentives. It's absolutely a political decision, because so many political decisions have been made in China which have incentivized making vehicles there. So right. I don't think you can, I mean, I would love to completely strip out politics from many parts of life, and I think I do with friends and things like that. It's too difficult. But I think in this situation, with this car, with, you know, with Toyota, you're absolutely right. It is an entirely political thing. Would they have made this vehicle in the US if it wasn't for that? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they would import them.
The Puppy V says, that's not politics, it's policy. Okay. I mean, kind of yes, but then kind of everything in the States is so polarized, like politically polarized. So, like, I think this is bringing all this domestic manufacturing is pretty good. It has a bit of the air of protectionism, but I think actually we kind of need to have, you know, our production. Some, you know, this is a critical, car building is a critical thing. Electric cars are, you know, critical to our future. We need to be able to have control of that. And yeah. This is one way of doing it.
The only way it would be, I think, a more of a political issue is if your leadership changes in 2024 and a lot of it, they try to reverse it. I'm not sure what they could, because the investment would be underway. I'm not sure what they could do to reverse it. And actually, so there's so much investment in the South, funnily enough, EV and battery making is becoming very much a red state thing. I don't think that would be any on anyone's radar for Trump or DeSantis or whoever to start unpicking this particular policy. So then I don't think it is political. I think it is. You're right. It's policy. I think whoever is in administration, you know, and gets inaugurated in 2025 is going to carry on with that. So, certainly over here, though, the EU sees it as massive protectionism. So does China. China's really unhappy, especially about things like Ford licensing the battery technology from CATL and building them in the United States. And China don't like it when the boot's on the other foot. So they're like, hang on a minute, this is Chinese IP leaving our shores. You don't like now, do you? So yeah, but the EU particularly have got a big set of decisions to make about, do they let this happen, or are they going to try and keep that investment on our shores? And that is going to be one of the big stories of the second half of this year.
Because there's been a lot of investment in battery factories and things in Europe, and now those vehicles aren't eligible for the incentives here. So I guess you have to sell European batteries in Europe, basically, and then and do your domestic manufacturing, which is, I don't know, like in the end, if it works better to build things locally than it is to ship, you know, cars all over the world, or you ship all the raw materials for those cars from all over the world. I don't know how it all works out, but yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter, because this is what's the policy is in place, and that's what we have to live with for the next few years. And I don't think anyone's going to change it, because it's just good for it's creating huge amounts of jobs and investment. And I really don't see how, like, politically that could be a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
Okay. So let's move on from that, because I don't know if there's Toyota's building a big battery factory in Georgia. I'm just trying to think where that is, in Georgia. But anyway, they're making a big battery factory. It's going to come out. It's going to start producing battery cells around the same time as this 3-row starts being produced. So it should supply that. That factory is going to have batteries for hybrids and EVs. But with this latest announcement, they've kicked up the investment for the EV battery side of things to another $2.1 billion. So it should have some decent capacity. You know, they haven't mentioned what the capacity is going to be yet. It's like a gigawatt hours of how many cells they'll produce. But it should be significant enough to support this 3-row. And they probably have future vehicles coming as well. Oh, there's Misco Electric. Hi there. it's also outside of Savannah. Okay. Right on. Okay, so we're moving on to our next story. Oh, yes. Right, we talked about Rivian a little earlier in the show. And so they had a little Instagram Q&A session last week, I think, when just after our show. And I kind of missed it. It was on the company's Instagram. But the video showed up on its YouTube page, and it's is pretty decent. He answers a lot of questions about different things, but early on in the video.
Oh, this was the one that we thought they might make the North American NACS announcement, and it wasn't
no,
at all.
Yeah.
We got all excited last
week. We were very excited last week about that.
We were giddy last week. We thought, oh, Rivi going to follow Ford, but and then none of us could find the Instagram stream. We were all swapping messages going, where is it? And none of us
right,
could find
I couldn't
it.
Find it.
No, yeah. Me neither.
But it's up on YouTube now, and it's a great video to watch. There's all kinds of stuff in there. So there's a poster. Oh, yeah. So this is the vehicle in behind them. This is what they showed. This is in the design studio, I guess, at Rivian. And this is a clay model underneath this tarp. But this is basically R2S. So the R2, the smaller, more affordable Rivian that's coming, it'll be a higher volume. Actually, they want to build like up to 200,000 R2 vehicles in 2026. And then 400,000 later on. So they're looking at some serious volumes for this. So there's a lot riding on this. Rivian's having a difficult time, like as far as like their share prices and all that kind of stuff. They're at risk of being delisted from the NASDAQ, which is not great. But I don't know. I'm not really sure what the problem is, because they're producing, but they have to have... They really need to instill more confidence in the investor class, basically, I think.
Oh, okay, really? Okay.
I think. Basically, that's what it is, because they have some ambitious plans here. This sounds like those are numbers that, you know, should yield decent profits. So, and that's what, you know, investors want. So, but they need to, people need to be confident they can achieve these goals, I think. Yeah. And so, I mean, just teasing this is good, but they really need to show this. And I expect they'll 2026... I don't know. I think they'll show this by the end of this year, maybe.
Well, we talked about Rivian earlier, didn't they? With the hype machine announcing things and not delivering 3,500 DC fast chargers at 600 locations by the end of the year, the camp kitchen with the induction hob, etc., and announcing things that don't get delivered, and it's just been a bugbear of anyone who's been covering EVs, like, you know, Dom, longer than I have actually been writing about green vehicles. And my podcasts were 5+ years old now. And it just became a bugbear because it, you know, announcement after announcement without shipping product. So I don't want to be too harsh on them. But I've also said many times as well, a lot of these companies need to just get on with being really good manufacturing businesses. However, as you point, I don't follow the financial side, Dom. As you point out, as Misko Electric points out, being delisted from the top 100 in the NASDAQ.
Right.
You
it's not
do
delisted
have to,
from the NASDAQ.
No, right. You do have to create a bit of a, you know, sort of light fire underneath people to get you noticed. So I'd like these companies to go away. I think Lucid does a pretty good job, actually. Lucid could probably be better at their marketing and PR and just making noise. And coming out with great product, really fantastic things. So whenever they deliver the R2S, yeah, for European market, as you say, look at the height of the vehicle behind RJ. If you try and work out the perspective there, he's probably standing however far in front of that vehicle that he is. Yeah, a lower, smaller vehicle for European markets. Although, honestly, I've seen one R1T. Yeah, it was an R1T. On UK roads, someone's imported one, and it didn't look out of sight. Now, I've also seen an F-150 Lightning imported,
right?
And that looks stupid.
That's a little bigger
on our roads, right. And it's great, and it looks like an American vehicle. I think the Rivian, I think the R1S and the R1C, that would suit our roads okay. But anything smaller for European customers. Yeah, like we get the short wheelbase buzz, and I think that is a very serviceable vehicle. So hopefully 2026 sounds like a long time away.
Yeah. I'm looking at this thing behind them though. I saw some comments that it was like Bronco size or something, but it looks smaller than that, smaller than Jeep. So I'm really, really curious to see how this is gonna look. I took it actually on the Inside EVs forum, I started a new thread. That's another vehicle, sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. Right.
Do you want to move on to that one now?
Yeah, let's just move on to that actually.
Cool.
So we had an article this week up on Inside EVs. We had a freelancer snag an interview with the head designer of Scout vehicles. So Scout, if you'll remember, was a brand owned by International Harvester back in the 80s when it went under. And then Volkswagen Group picked it up and have decided to launch it as an independent brand in the USA. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see this is the head designer here. And he's, you know, he just talked a little bit. It's still a little ways away. It launches in 2026. So a little ways away yet. but it's an off-road focused SUV in the $40,000 range to start. And then a larger truck launching, or like a pickup truck launching shortly after with a slightly higher sticker price. So it's pretty interesting. I started a new subform on the Inside EVs forum. So if you're interested in Scout, what the possibilities are, there's a couple threads just talking about what Scout is exactly, kind of laying that out. And then there's one, you know, dedicated to design, because we'll be talking about design for a little while. I did find, like, on the Scout homepage, they have a teaser image, sort of just the outline, a silhouette of the vehicle head on. And I lightened it up a little bit. You can see there's a bit of a on the bottom, like a skid guard across the bottom of the thing that you can see, that you can't really see when it's blacked out, but there's not really a whole lot of other detail available on that yet. But if you're interested, please make your way over there and share your thoughts and what your expectations or hopes are for that. Mm. Yeah. I don't know if you had a chance to, there's not really a whole lot in the way of visuals with this. It's more just talking about the design. It sounded promising to me.
Is Scout still a thing in the US? Would it mean something to somebody? Is nostalgia behind it? Do you think they've got some wind behind them just by using the name?
I think it's, for people of my age, I mean, deep into my 50s. So, you know, people of my age are pretty familiar with, you know, as a great, I always thought it was really cool looking. I'd like to have one. I know some younger guys actually who had one more recently, like in the 2000 or in the 2010s, had Scouts, and you know, they turn heads, because you can get them open air as well. You can get them without the roof. They come in a few different configurations, and I really liked them. But it's interesting, it's in the same space. It's going to be in the same space as Rivian, right? They're going to be pretty much direct competitors, them and then an electric Jeep and whatever Ford, you know, Ford has like the Bronco, which is big for them. It's a gas vehicle. But I would not be surprised, of course, if eventually they have an all-electric version of that, not this generation, maybe a future generation, because Bronco is a great nameplate for them, right?
Okay. I think for us it's similar to Jeep over here. Like Jeep sell cars over here, but it's sort of like 0.3% of the SUV market. I think I read recently that Jeep's not—it's just not a thing. But with their Jeep EVs, I think there's enough nostalgia, love. People assume they're four-wheel drive, and people assume that, you know, you can climb a mountain with one, even though you'll be taking the kids to school. So I think like names like Jeep. I wonder if Scout was similar for you. Jeep do exist over here. They just got such a tiny share that by using that heritage, that nostalgia, that name, just because they don't sell anything really doesn't mean that they can't capitalize on that. So, but it just seems like a long time away, but yeah.
Right. It's 2024. It's still two years. So, but do you have a lot of off-roading? Is off-roading like a big thing in the UK? You have the Defenders, right, already. So you have vehicles over there that can go off-road.
Yeah, I guess if you are on a farm and you want a working vehicle, then you're going to have a Land Rover. And if you have got a few quid, I was at a nice hotel this week because it was our wedding anniversary. So we went to a spa earlier this week. It was nice in Windsor. For any royal fans watching around the world, Windsor's a beautiful place. It was a very nice hotel. We were very much out of place, and the car park was full of Range Rovers. Like we turned up. We knew it was a nice place when we booked it. It's that kind of country house retreat. Just like every other car, there was like, you know, a BMW 7 Series, Range Rover, S-Class, Range Rover. And so, yeah, we have those. But no one's using them to do any more than, you know, driving in a muddy field.
What did you bring? The MG?
We took the Hyundai. I said to the doorman, it's the kind of hotel with the doorman. And I said, I'm so sorry to mess up your car park. And he was laughing. Obviously, he's a doorman of people. You know, they can read people as they walk towards them.
Oh, yeah.
And so he was very, very good at his job. So I said, I'm so sorry to make a mess of your car park. And he's like, sir, you are welcome, whatever you drive and all that kind of stuff. So, so we took the Hyundai. But, yeah, we feel like we should have been turning up in a Range Rover to this place. And it's like, yeah, the country set drive those and maybe sort of, you know, the London yummy mummies do. But no, off-roading, like going, our friends at, TFL, will often make their great videos and they're off scrambling over these big rocks and stuff. No, it's not so much a cultural thing over here.
Right. And I think the Scout is not going to be like a rock crawling machine. It's going to have like off-roading capabilities, but it's not going to be like, I don't think it's going to be like full-on Wrangler kind of, where this take it to, what's the Moab, I guess, and some crazy rock climbing configuration, whatever. That's just sort of a special little niche all its own. So we're up pretty close to the end of the time. There's a few stories we can just hit on some headlines that I think if you want. So Faraday Future FF91 Launch Edition model is priced at $309,000.
Good luck.
Yes. Faraday Future. Where the future...
I would say good luck to the buyers of those vehicles. They are going to be expensive things that might not always be very well supported in the future if the company's not around. There we go. Reminds me of Lightyear a little bit. But
it struggled so hard. I mean, Faraday Future struggled for years now to get to the starting line. And are they manufacturing? I didn't even have a chance to look at this, but... Yeah, they plan to make 300 at the very top. It says they plan to make 300 units. Pull up my own version of it.
I mean, we wish them well, obviously.
I mean, it would be nice if they could do, what they say they want to do.
It's gorgeous and beautiful and lovely, but yeah, 300 grand. So there we go.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like the Celestic, isn't it? So it's like, okay, well, this is a very nice little trinket for somebody who's got a few quid in their pocket.
Right. Isn't Celestic a little cheaper than that, though? $250,000?
Yeah, I think the Celestic is a relative bargain.
Right. And Cadillac's going to be there for you, too. And exactly. And Faraday Future could be there in the future as well. I don't know.
Maybe. We wish them well.
Yeah. So let's move on. Colorado's got a new... Tesla. That's okay.
I'm going out of order. Sorry.
You're going in order. I jumped ahead because I won't talk about this time. North non-Tesla supercharging is coming to Canada this year. So there's still some. So Tesla is still planning on opening up its network to CCS charging cars. I guess it'll be with a magic dock, I would imagine, for Canada at least. So.
Good. Yeah. Great news. I think that rollout will happen. It's happened so quick in Europe, by the way. It was the trial. They were like, well, we're going to monitor the first 7, monitor the first 11. Now it's 50. We're going to monitor. It expanded so quickly. So it's not, and obviously it's not all of them, but if it's however quickly they do it, I think Tesla, if it's the same as over here, they rolled it out really, really quickly. Although no need for the magic dock over here, of course, as everything's CCS. Right. So that is another, they haven't got to actually put hardware in, which is a bit of a change, I guess.
Right. So it makes it a lot easier actually to switch over there.
Absolutely.
So I'd totally forgotten about that rollout and how it was going. So that's a good
That update. Yeah. You look at the map of European superchargers, which are open. You can go anywhere. It's great.
The next little item we had was Colorado's hikes its EV tax credit to $5,000 on top of $7,500. So if you live in Colorado, man, that's going to be sweet for y'all. $5,000, man, on top of the $7,500. Man, it's tempting. I like North Florida a lot.
So that's a tax credit. So I get my head around that the way that you guys you do your taxes. Because we are taxed at source of income over here. So, you know, we pay our tax monthly and our employer pays it on our behalf. So we never see the money. We never have to pay. So that is something that if you have a tax bill in Colorado, the state will then like let you off your state bill or something. How does that work?
I guess I hadn't really thought about that. And actually, now that I do think about that, like Florida, we don't have a state tax, like an income tax. So having a tax credit based incentive would be kind of odd.
Yeah. Okay.
But as a Pampalak says, Kyle will buying a few more Teslas then, I guess. Or VW buses apparently.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for them. All right. Also, the 2023 Lordstown Endurance EPA range ratings are in, and they reveal some terrible efficiency. So Lordstown has struggled to get off the ground, but they're sort of trickling out trucks, I guess. I don't know. They made a couple dozen, and they were recalled for some reason. But they're going forward. I would imagine they're trickling out. But so these things have in-wheel motors, which is the first time that tech has really been used at its scale in a vehicle. We've seen them on motorcycles and scooters, but in a vehicle, it's a little bit different because you have lateral forces on a motorcycle. You have your motor, like your in-wheel motor. When you turn, that motor is turning with the bike at all. But in a truck like this on four wheels, when you turn, there's like lateral forces involved happening. And some of those can affect the motor, I think. So electric motors have what they call an air gap inside of them. So the rotor is spinning and there's a tiny gap between the rotor and the stator. And the bigger that gap is, the less efficient they are. And it sounds like, so this is just me kind of guessing. I don't know for sure. I'm not an engineer. I'm not very smart. But what I'm thinking is they've had to increase that gap somewhat. So if they're turning, if a car has experienced a lot of G-forces and it's turning and there's a lot of pressure and that gap closes and the stator comes in contact with the rotor, the motor's done for. It's ruined. It's done. My mic's falling.
I don't, the total range, 174 miles range, is not an issue if it's a work truck. It's doing a known mileage every single day.
But it should be double that.
In a fleet. That's fine. Well, no, fleets know the mileage their vehicles do. So, and they, if it charges overnight at a depot or it's a fleet vehicle, it's fine. Or as a working vehicle. But of course, when the efficiency of a vehicle stinks, then you are adding more cost to the running cost of the vehicle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is then going to impact the bottom line, and fleet buyers are going to look at what it's going to cost to run the vehicle. And it's just efficiency is so little talked about, but it's so massively important.
Oh, it is, especially in electric vehicles, because the range is so important, and the efficiency means you can get away with a smaller battery and go farther. So this is
save money.
This has the same efficiency as the Hummer EV. Woo! We understand why the Hummer EV, it has three motors to begin with. I guess this has four, but there's no mechanical losses, right? Because all the losses are electrical, basically, because there's no axles going on, where mechanical losses happen. Right? It's built right into the wheel. So, yeah, that's not great. Anyway, what's our time? We can end it there, I think, actually.
Okay. Brilliant.
Yeah. All right. So that brings us to the end of our show. Thanks for joining us. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily, and Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. I'm at Dominic on Post.News, Mastodon, and Spoutable. Click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications, give us a thumbs up, please. And thank you all very much for joining us. It's been great. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.